The new year is here, and it's the perfect time to kickstart your meditation practice. The Morning Meditation for Women podcast has short, daily guided meditations that will help you start your day with intention and focus, and make it so easy to get you into the habit. Imagine feeling so much more calm and confident in 2025. Follow and listen to Morning Meditation for Women on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
You know who that is?
Everywhere.
Is that Dean Martin?
No.
No, that's Bing Crosby.
Yes.
Yeah.
Bing Crosby.
Not necessarily a good dude.
Well, not as bad a dude as his daughter made him out to be.
Really?
Yes. There's been a lot of
controversy.
Yes.
Many such cases.
Really? That's John Hancock Jr. and John Hancock Sr., along with Michael Kelly. We're sitting in for the DGS.
All of them.
Wheeler, Rachel, Andrew, everybody.
Dave.
Andrew. Even Andrew gets off on days they all go, huh?
I know. Yeah, they got it's a good deal.
Yeah, it's not a bad deal. And speaking of a good deal, are you guys superhero movie guys?
Not really, no.
Yeah?
No.
Me neither. So the superhero movies, when I think of a superhero movie, I think of all the stuff that's advertised on television right now. Iron Man, Ant-Man, Ant-Man. You know, they beat each other up. Wolverine.
Ant-Man?
Yeah, Ant-Man.
He's not an Ant-Man.
Yeah.
No, he's got like five movies.
Ant-Man?
Yeah.
Has five movies?
Yeah, Ant is in the insect.
Yeah, and Ant-Man, I think Paul Rudd is the star of Ant-Man.
Yeah.
The comedian.
That's a thing, huh?
Yeah, big actor.
Oh, John, these superhero movies are so popular, it's about the only thing that's being made in Hollywood right now. Well, St. Louis has an actor that's from here. His name is James Gunn. Are you familiar with James Gunn?
Yeah.
He's deep inside the DC world, and he just rolled out a new trailer for the movie Superman. Now, the Superman that you and I are familiar with, John, is Christopher Reeves and Mario Lou Henner and that whole,
Margot Kidder.
Margot Kidder, yeah. and Marlon Brando and a bunch of folks were in that original Superman movie, and then they made a couple of them. So this is supposed to be the first real big Superman since then. Listen to this. It's had more views, over 250 million views of the trailer for the new Superman. I have no desire to see what they've done to Superman.
Zero.
Yeah.
What's going to be different about Superman in this movie as opposed to the previous ones?
Yeah, I think Superman's a tough one to do because you have this guy who's invincible except for this rock, and it's just tough to make a compelling movie, I think, if that's your premise.
Well, I mean, he sold a lot of comic books back in the day, but I don't see what the allure is to superhero movies.
Well, I saw Batman, like the original Batman that had Michael Keaton in it and stuff, yeah, and that was great. It was novelty then when they were doing it. Yeah. Now I feel like it's the only movies that are coming out of Hollywood that I'm turned off on movies, and now, John, it's not only in the movies, they're starting to stream them, and even lesser-known characters are getting their own little roles.
So I will tell you this. So the Penguin, the Batman villain played by Danny DeVito in the past.
Right.
So there's an HBO series all about him as the main character, played by Colin Farrell. They put him under a bunch of makeup. They somehow add like 100 pounds of weight to him with prosthetics. But it is a phenomenal show. I mean, it's, superhero and that it's in the Batman universe, but Batman doesn't make a single appearance. And it is just a gritty kind of crime noir type of show.
So is he like half bird in the show?
He's full man.
It's
about the Penguin's rise. Imagine like the Sopranos set in Gotham City. Is how I can describe it.
It's how he becomes the bad guy.
It's how he becomes the bad guy.
A villain.
But it's much more grounded. He's dealing with the mafia. There aren't any superpowers. Batman, like I said, doesn't even make an appearance.
Well, he doesn't have superpowers either.
He doesn't,
Batman.
No.
Listen to me. I'm acting like I know superhero movies.
There you go. Yeah.
Well, Batman, he had superpowers.
No. I think everything was mechanical.
Steroids,
yeah. I think everything was mechanical with Batman. So like
interesting.
Bruce Wayne, he was the billionaire, right? And he had all these people, and like you said, like a James Bond guy would help him make the spider web things that shoot out and stuff. So he never really had any superpowers.
Well,
like Superman could fly.
Yeah.
Batman, he's just a regular dude like us with some really fancy contraptions.
Man, a very cool car.
The Penguin was so good. I actually watched that Batman movie made by the same director that came out a couple of years ago and thoroughly enjoyed it. I mean, that was the first time I've seen a superhero movie since Christopher Nolan's Batman wrapped up, you know, 10 years ago. And it was good. So I don't know if I'm just a Batman guy and not the rest, but maybe there's more.
So this Penguin fellow, how does he get to be known as, if he's not actually a Penguin, how does he get to be known as the Penguin?
He walks with a limp and he's got a big hooked nose, so it kind of just looks like a fat bird. I think that's why they call him.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Does he wear the tails on his?
He doesn't have the tails. He doesn't have the monocle or the top hat in this. I mean, it's just a grizzled, just gross dude living in squalor. And
John, do you remember the Batman, the original Batman on TV back in the day?
Oh, sure. Like, yeah.
Do you remember the Penguin showing up?
Yeah.
Yeah,
I do.
I guess that's where the monocle and the top hat comes from.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that show, that was a show that was on, I think, in the 60s, maybe 70s. But I always enjoyed
Adam West.
Adam Wayne.
No,
and it was Adam West, yeah.
Adam West played the role.
A resurgence and Family Guy, Adam West.
Did he really?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
The Mara Cohawk.
Yeah, well, I'm just not into the superhero thing, and I just wonder how much longer it's going to go. I almost feel guilty like I should be supporting movies that aren't superhero movies as a result.
Completely, yeah.
So, for instance, right now the Bob Dylan movie's coming out this week.
Mm-hmm.
I am half tempted to go see it in a theater just to make my vote to Hollywood. Like, make more of this and less of, fantasy productions. But it must sell. I mean, obviously it sells. And then they can make video games out of all this stuff. I mean, I know Wheeler and was talking about the other day, he's playing Indiana Jones video games, so I would assume they're making video games out of Batman.
Yeah,
but you know, the Bob Dylan movie, Dylan really, at the end of the day, isn't that colorful of a figure. I mean, he didn't battle with drugs and, because the biopic movies that I've seen of musical stars, the Johnny Cash biopic,
sure,
Fascinating Life, even the Ray Charles biopic.
Excellent.
Was very well done, and he had a very troubled, difficult life. I just don't see that there's that much compelling in Bob Dylan's story.
Do you know Bob Dylan's story?
Not much.
Me neither. But, yeah. So I'm going to be interested to see. Now, I do know, Bob Dylan is famous recluse. Doesn't like to talk to the media.
Right.
Lets his music speak for himself. He's a better songwriter than he is a singer, obviously. But he sent out a tweet. He didn't even go pick up his Nobel Peace Prize. That's how much of a... He sent out a tweet the other day saying Timothée Chalamet did an incredible job playing him in the role and, blah, blah, blah. And Timothée Chalamet, who's the new it actor in Hollywood, just responded, wow. Like, this guy doesn't respond to anything. He just simply said, wow, because Bob Dylan doesn't talk to anybody.
Yeah, that's awesome. So Timothée Chalamet, I didn't know much about him. I didn't think I'd be a big fan, but he was the guest picker on College Game Day for college football, and he did a good job talking ball. So he is my support. Anytime you get an actor who could talk college football, can't be that bad of a guy.
Went to a Bob Dylan concert over in Southern Illinois. What is it, the Gateway Grizzlies or something, Ball Stadium over there.
Uh-huh.
And it was Willie Nelson and Bob Dylan together. Willie Nelson came on. They played in the outfield of this little ballpark. So I had seats, and we all went and saw Willie, and Willie was great. Willie's one of those guys, too. You have no idea the songs that he's written, that he's singing there. So Willie gets done. The sun's going down, and there was Bob Dylan. About three songs into it, we couldn't understand what the guy was saying. Like, you knew the song, but you couldn't hear the words, and we wound up leaving. I left the Bob Dylan show early.
And you're going to go see the movie.
Yeah, I'm going to feel guilty for doing it.
Huh. Well, that's terrible. it's like listening to somebody from Scotland speaking English. I can't understand them.
Yeah. Is that hard for you when you're watching all your British sports?
Yeah, well, the snooker. So, you got these guys. Most of them are English or England. There's some are from Wales. And then a couple of them are from Scotland. And I can't understand a word they say. And they're speaking the same language.
The Scots and the Brits, they sound differently.
Very differently.
Because the Brits, there's something elegant about the way that they sound, even if what they're saying is less than.
Yeah.
But the Scotch you're saying,
Yeah,
it's like a governor. It's like the governor from, you know, he just kind of mumbles from I'm sure I don't know. Fix the highways and stuff.
That's Michael Kelly. When we come back, oh, we're going to do our state and local government politics year in review next, here on KMOX.
It's Hancock and Kelly. Happy New Year. Happy holidays to you. And John, what a year 2024 was. For local and state politics, not only did we have the national elections going on, but we had the statewide elections here in Missouri. The big focus was on the governor's race, where I think anybody who with an R behind them their name decided that they were going to run for governor over the last couple of years. And there was this one candidate, Mike Kehoe, the lieutenant governor, a unique story to be a Republican, who went out and did something I've not seen in quite some time, which is bring together non-traditional groups, both Democrats and Republicans, to his side, not only for a general election, but probably more importantly, John, an election that was going to be a foregone conclusion. Whoever won the Republican primary was likely going to be the governor. Mike Kehoe put together an impeccable campaign to win that primary and then ultimately take the November election.
He did. And we've entered this era now where effectively whoever wins the Republican primary for these statewide offices is the person who wins. And so here you had Kehoe, relatively little known. He was appointed lieutenant governor, and then he won the office in his own right in 2020. He had been a state senator for a little bit, but most of his life was spent in the private sector. And, you know, just to quickly kind of give you a sense of his story, which is an amazing one. He was born in North St. Louis in Baden. His father was a St. Louis City police officer. And Mike was the youngest of six kids, five of whom survived. And his father abandoned the family when Mike was 1 year old. He only laid eyes on his father once in his adult life that he can remember. And very poor. The family moved from Baden to Walnut Park, which was a really rough neighborhood in those days. It still is, of course. And he was raised there and had the very good fortune of being made known to Dave Sinclair, the Ford dealer in South St. Louis, who himself had been a St. Louis City police officer. And he knew of the situation of the family. And he kind of took young Mike under his wing, and so he got him a scholarship to Chaminade, and Mike would take a bi-state bus to school every day, and started detailing cars at Dave Sinclair Ford for extra spending money, and then he became a truck salesman. He was good, and then at a very young age, they put him in charge of the truck sales department and had to get a special clearance from Ford because Mike was so young at the time. By the time he turns 23 or so, the Ford dealers in St. Louis all owned a van conversion business in Lynn, Missouri. That's in the middle of the state, rural area. It was losing money. And they asked Mike if he would go see what he could do, and he did. And he turned it into an ambulance manufacturing business. And today it's the third largest ambulance manufacturer in North America. Remarkable. By 28, he was awarded Mike Kehoe Ford in Jefferson City, became the youngest Ford dealer in the country. He's in the Automotive Hall of Fame. About that same time, since he was a little boy, Mr. Sinclair owned a farm and would take Mike out to the farm on weekends. Mike fell in love with that rural setting. His own background being raised in North St. Louis in a very small home with six other people. And so when Mike was able, he bought a farm. And today, he's got a very successful cow-calf operation that he runs. He's been a success in business. He's been a success in agriculture. He understands the problems that our cities face because he's lived them. He's a very unique figure, and he put together a really incredible victory.
Well, and he beat a household name, the Ashcroft name, amongst others who had put together some more firebranded style Republican politics. Mike Kehoe ran an interesting campaign, John, where he brought, like I said, non-traditional folks to the table. What is it about Mike Kehoe that brought people together, or are the circumstances such in Missouri that people want to have somebody they can rally around rather than somebody that would be divisive?
Well, remember, it was a three-way primary, so Bill Eigel was in that, as was Jay Ashcroft, and so you know, the Republican electorate has become much more of a populist entity. And Mike, in so many respects, is a traditional conservative. But there's still a healthy number of traditional conservatives in the Missouri Republican Party electorate. And there was a sufficient number of them for him to win that three-way primary, went on to defeat Crystal Quaid, the Democrat, in November. That was a compelling story this year. The other compelling story, more closer to home, is that of Cori Bush.
Yeah, Cori Bush, the congresswoman who toppled the Clay dynasty, several decades of the Clays running it. She had come in. She became a progressive Democrat, ran in conjunction with Kim Gardner and Tashara Jones. They were going to reform criminal justice. They were going to be a new style Democrat. Cori Bush aligned herself with the squad up in Washington, D.C., including AOC and Bernie Sanders. And then, John, the Israeli-Gaza conflict came about, and sentiment changed for Cori Bush in terms of folks who wanted to see her go. Money poured into the district, what could arguably be the most expensive primary congressional race in the country. And Wesley Bell, the prosecutor from St. Louis County, who toppled the longtime prosecutor, Mr. McCullough, winds up taking on Cori Bush, taking her out, and is headed to D.C. here at the beginning of the
year. I have never seen the kind of money spent in Missouri on a congressional race like that. Have you? I just can't think of it.
Well, I mean, it was national proxy fight. I mean, you had the progressive money versus a lot of business and Jewish interests that were playing out, and it was a narrative that was going on in the country, even in those couple of weeks leading up to it as it related to the conflict.
Ironic now that of the three you mentioned, Tashara Jones, Kim Gardner, and Cori Bush, only Tashara Jones still holds public office.
And if we were to do a 2025 prediction, we would probably be talking about what this wall means for Tashara Jones. Progressives definitely taking it on the chin. One of them ran for the United States Senate against probably one of the most unpopular Republicans nationally, but popular in Missouri. That's Joggin' Josh Hawley. He winds up holding on to his seat handily against Lucas Kuntz, who came out, John, trying to be a different style Democrat. In fact, he wouldn't even endorse Joe Biden, and Kamala Harris was trying to say that he was going to hold Josh Hawley accountable and he would go to D.C. and carry that same populist message that Josh Hawley had from a left-of-center perspective.
Yeah, you know, it was interesting to see that because you had in Kuntz a candidate who was different, who had money. He had plenty of money. That campaign spent millions of dollars. And yet his vote performance on Election Day was not appreciably different than Crystal Quaid, the Democrat running for governor, who had virtually no money. And yet their performance was about the same. So that kind of tells you that the Democrats have a structural problem in winning elections in the state of Missouri.
And as we reflect back on 2025, that particular race sticks out with me because that was two individuals in Lucas Kuntz and Josh Hawley, which they were so similar, John, whether it be their political policies, whether it be the way they dressed, the way they talked, their commercials. It just, this populism on both sides of the aisle on full display, is it a sign of what's to come?
We'll see. You know, I don't know in Missouri specifically. I think the Democrats are going to have to start expanding out. They got the cities, you know, Kansas City, St. Louis. They win some races out of Columbia because it's a college town. They won the state Senate seat there this year. They're going to have to begin to make some penetration out into the collar counties, the St. Charles's, back in Jefferson County where they used to run the place, and incrementally build a base because they've got a real problem.
In 2025, the focus on local elections takes hold. We'll find out some changes just like we saw in 2024. He's John Hancock. I'm Michael Kelly. We look forward to another year of local politics with you right here on KMOX. Welcome back to the DGS. It's Hancock and Kelly and Hancock. We have John Jr. with us, and we are joined, as always, on the DGS by the greatest weather forecaster in all of the country. He is the king.
My wife calls him the king.
David, how are you, sir?
I'm doing great. Good to be with you guys.
Yeah.
So, safe to say, no white Christmas?
Nope. But you know what? In the extended, in my long-range forecast, I thought we might have a shot at one. We've got the storms. It's a very active week this week, but it's all in the form of rain. The cold air is not linking up, so no white Christmas.
But wet tomorrow and cool on Christmas Day.
Cool is probably the word. It's not overly cold in this stretch. The rain tomorrow will be developing primarily during the afternoon. It's chilly rain with 44. Tomorrow night, Tuesday night, Christmas Eve, it does look wet in the form of periods of rain throughout the night, but it's a light rain. We're not going to see a lot of rain out of these systems. There's three of them that will be coming through. About 39 for the overnight low. Christmas Day is cloudy, a couple of showers from time to time. I don't see all-day rain, 48. Some spotty rain around Thursday. Another steady rain coming in on Friday, but that also looks light. That will continue into Saturday. The next truly dry, sunny day is Sunday, coming up on Sunday.
That's nothing wrong with that. Now,
we can live with that.
Just dawned on me, I've got the king of weather on here. So I am producing the governor's inauguration in Jefferson City on the 13th of January.
All right.
Does your little Doppler look that far into the future?
Well, I always look far into the future, especially for you.
Thank you.
And there are signs of a pretty good Arctic wave trying to drop into the middle of the country and the eastern part of the country, probably between January 5th and January 10th or 11th.
Oh.
So that it's a close call. And the details are really fuzzy at this point, if it will even release. But there does appear to be some colder air coming in a little bit after the first of the year.
So Dave, how long have you been doing weather forecasting?
On TV, 42 years. On radio, I'm about 48 now, I guess, 49.
In that time, the technology of weather forecasting has had to have changed exponentially. Is it any better? Is it any better? Because are you getting it right more now than you did back when you started?
In my personal opinion, probably not. There's a lot of information, a ton of information now that like I didn't have back in the 70s when I started, and really going back into the 60s when I was in school and growing interest in meteorology. But I think we've gotten bogged down with too much information. There's so many computer models out there now, which are not a forecast, it's just guidance, that you can look at. And you basically are saying, you know what, I'm just going to go with what the computer model says. And that's the wrong way to do it. Always has been and always will be. So there's some bad information that gets out there because people are using their phones now for weather forecasts. For the most part in this country, those phone messages are phone sites that you go to, websites that you go to, apps that you use, are the GFS model, which is the American model. And if you really watch what that app is doing, I don't care what app it is, they're all doing the same thing. You'll see that forecast change sometimes three or four times a day, because that's every time the computer model runs and spits out information. No human eyes are seeing that product. It's just a bang. Here it is. Here it is. Here it is. And AI is starting to get involved in it, too.
Yeah, I'm sure. Here's a question I've always wondered. You know, when it snows, and they say, you know, we got 4 inches of snow. Well, that's pretty easy. You put the ruler in the ground out there, and you see how high the snow goes.
Right. But still, forecasting that 4 inches of snow is extremely difficult.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah. Yeah. But then they tell you, we got 6 inches of rain. How do they know it's 6 inches? You can't measure it with a ruler.
No, but you have a rain gauge.
A rain gauge?
Yeah.
Oh.
I want you to go to the hardware store, any hardware store, and walk in and say, Dave Murray told me to get a rain gauge.
A rain gauge?
They'll have one.
I just set that sucker outside. It gets rained on and it tells me how much, huh?
Yep.
Fascinating.
You know, make sure it's not in the shadow of your house. You know, make sure it's kind of in the open space so you get a good measurement. You could also use a coffee can.
Oh, I guess that's right.
It'd be really cheap.
Yeah.
Is there a calculation for how much rain would create how much snow?
Like, yes, but it all depends on the air mass. Typically in St. Louis, we use 1 inch of rain equals 10 inches of snow. Out in the Rocky Mountains, 1 inch of rain could equal 25 to 30 inches of snow.
Wow.
That's
one inch of rain could be 10 inches of snow.
Yeah.
Right. And that's the that's the normal ratio. But a lot of times in St. Louis, the ratio could be 1 inch of rain equals 3 or 4 inches of snow, depending on temperature. Are we close to the freezing point? Are we a little bit above freezing? I've always kind of used freezing, obviously, as the important number, but we can get snow when it's 34, 35, 36 degrees, depending on the upper atmosphere.
This is where the IST comes in.
Right.
The meteorologist.
Right.
Because you got to know some stuff here.
Yeah,
you you can't, you know.
This yeah, you do. Brother,
he's gone to school for this stuff. He's got an IST at the end of his name.
Dave, were you up at Good Morning America when we had the great blizzard of 82
was the blizzard. No, I was at Channel 5 at the time.
All right. Is there a chance that snow like that could ever come to St. Louis again with climate change?
Sure. Sure. It was a thunder snow. That's the important thing to remember.
Love that.
Is that I've always kind of called it a once in a lifetime event, but that means that it could certainly happen again, just like the floods of 93 could happen again. But that was a relatively rare event where we had a band of snow training thunderstorms, which meant those thunderstorms kept coming over the exact same area and dumped the snow. And St. Louis just happened to be right in the middle of it. You went out to Columbia, no snow at all. You went to Mount Vernon, it was rain.
Huh.
That was the tiny little window of big snow.
Oh, and it was one of the greatest days of my life when I was a kid.
My senior year of high school and my last semester, and that we got that snow. We couldn't open the front door.
No.
Nope. It was crazy. Nope.
Yeah, officially, I think it was like 13.2 inches. I think they had a piece of saran wrap on the measuring board. Yes, most folks saw 25 inches of snow.
Yeah, I stood on top of my swing set as a little kid. You know, you could stand on top of the snow, and then I went on, stood on top of my swing set. It was crazy.
And it was not associated with a big old low pressure system. It was just a relatively rare event that just happened to be right over St. Louis. So it was basically like a July thunderstorm, except the temperature was cold enough.
Is Janice there with you at the moment?
She's out in the backyard.
What'd you get her for Christmas?
We've actually decided not to do a Christmas between the two of us this year because we just came back from Hawaii for about 12 days.
Ooh.
And our son and his family and our grandson just rolled in. We actually did Christmas on Wednesday and into Thursday, mainly for the grandson.
How old?
Who's going to be? He'll be five the 2nd of January.
Is there anything better than a grandchild?
No, there isn't.
I mean,
there isn't.
Oh my gosh. It's the greatest.
Do you think Dave knows the theme song to Bluey like you do?
I don't know. You don't know the theme song to Bluey.
I do not know Bluey at all. He is into Trash Truck, and he's into Paw Patrol.
Oh, yeah. Paw Patrol's a big one. Yeah.
He'll go down the hallway singing the Paw Patrol song.
Well, man, I'll tell you what. It's always great to get your insight. There's nobody. Well, he's the king, ladies and gentlemen. I think we just leave it at that. Dave Murray, thank you so much.
Thank your wife for me.
I will do that. Merry Christmas, buddy.
We'll talk to you tomorrow, too.
All right. Oh, great. Tomorrow. Okay. Bye-bye. And Michael? We're going to deal with some Christmas songs when we come back.
What are we going to deal with them about?
We'll talk about it.
All right.
Next on KMOX.
Back to the DGS. Sitting in is John Hancock Jr. along with John Hancock the Senior and Michael Sean Kelly.
It's hard to mess up a Bruce Springsteen song. Even Bruce does well with a Christmas song.
I agree. I almost think it's a little bit beneath him as an artist. It feels like a cash grab. It's good Christmas music, no doubt, but it almost feels like he's in the stratosphere where you're kind of.
But he did it in the 1980s, Junior. I mean, this isn't a song that he just threw out last week.
Yeah,
it's been out forever.
Billy Joel at his peak, you know, he never, you know, I don't want to call it sinking to that low, but, you know, it feels a little gimmicky is all I'm saying. I'm glad he did it, but it feels a little gimmicky.
Paul McCartney, U2, the Rolling Stones, Chuck Berry, everybody's done a Christmas song.
Chuck Berry did a Christmas song?
Oh, yeah. Oh, he's got a bunch of them. We're going to go out with some Chuck Berry.
Oh, all right.
Merry Christmas, Rudolph. Yeah.
Of course. Yeah, I don't know how I feel about it. I like stuff that was done in the 40s, 50s. Yeah,
that's clear.
You know, Sinatra, hard to beat.
Right.
Bing Crosby, hard to beat.
Mel Torme.
Dean Martin.
You can beat him.
Throw him up there.
Who?
Dean Martin.
Dean Martin, hard to beat. Yeah.
Really? Mel Torme you can beat, but Dean Martin you can't.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Mel Torme's fine.
It seems like there aren't many new Christmas songs that are taking on in the, you know, cultural lexicon.
Oh, like, wait a minute. What about Mariah Carey?
Well, Mariah Carey, but that song's 20 years old at this point, if not older.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's made big bucks with that song.
There's this one that drives me crazy. I can't stand it.
Which one?
It's called, what's it called? Christmas Shoes?
The Christmas Shoes, yeah.
Yeah, it's about the kid's mom's going to die and they're getting Christmas shoes. I mean, it's horrible.
Yeah. I haven't heard that one in a few years. Yeah, I think that may be left.
I've been on a one-man wrecking mission to get that. I mean, it's a horrible song.
It was an awful song, yeah.
Every year they try to come up with some song that will pull your heartstrings to. You know, there was one way in a Dear Mr. Jesus, I just had to write to you.
And it's still Mariah Carey at the top. And then Wham! They come back with their Last Christmas, which apparently is topping the charts now.
Well, Wham! As we know, is Michael, or who is
the Wham! Guy?
Faith. Gotta have faith. George Michael.
George Michael.
It's George Michael, who's dead now.
Yeah.
But his music's still making it.
Yeah.
Wham is the top Christmas
song? That tends
song?
To happen, Michael. I mean,
what's
you know,
that?
Beethoven, Mozart. I mean, yeah, the music Elvis. Tends to live on after you're out of here.
If you're lucky.
Yeah.
If you're lucky. I mean, you know, there's some people going to make some big bucks. When, like, Michael Jackson's probably worth more dead than he was alive.
So did you hear this? Michael Jackson's got a piece that he recorded years ago, and that the state's fighting about it, and it's likely never to be released.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So unpublished music.
Yeah.
Huh.
I think it's recorded.
How do you feel about that as an artist? There's, you know, there's many people who think, you know, there's a reason that these guys didn't release that music because it wasn't right. It wasn't their product.
Yeah.
Prince has got the same thing going on right now. They have this whole group of stuff together and you know, people wanting to make money want to put it out.
Right. Yeah. I remember Scott Joplin. Uh-huh. A piece of his was released posthumously by his publisher. And it's a fine piece of music, so I'm glad it came out.
Can you play it?
But I mean, I haven't played it in years.
Yeah.
It's called The Reflection Rag. Lovely piece.
Reflection Rag.
Yep, came out in 1917, several months after he passed away.
Are there ragtime Christmas songs, or is there just ragtime style to a Christmas song?
Yeah, you could apply the style to anything.
Yeah, but there's no Christmas song that was written
probably,
like ragtime.
Probably there was. Back, you know, ragtime was popular from about 1896 to 1920.
About the same time snooker was popular.
And then jazz took over. Jazz took over from there, became the more popular music.
The eight ball version of the music world.
Yeah. Oh, there it is.
That's nice, that Reflection Rag. Yeah, it's a nice piece. Played a little fast there. Who's version of that? I know, but who's the performer? Do you know? No, we don't know. This piece works a lot better at a reduced tempo.
Okay. And it's a Christmas tune.
No, it's the piece that was released after Joplin died.
Oh, okay.
The Reflection Rag.
I got confused. So
you did get confused, Michael. It happens on occasion.
Well, it is Scott Joplin. It was 100 years ago, and all of his music kind of sounds alike. That song sounds like every other song I hear you play.
Well,
it's ragtime.
You know, you don't have the ear for it. And
no, I don't.
No.
No, I do like you doing it.
It's a lovely music.
And I mean, anybody who's not gotten a chance to see Senior.
No, it's incredible. Yeah.
He moves.
Yeah. With all due respect, you would never see it coming if you didn't see it with your own eyes.
Right. Like, whenever he does that boasting about what an athlete he was, you know, Kelly, they used to call me the stork back in high school.
Yeah, the things that he should be boastful about, you know, he downplays, and there's humility there. That's usually a telltale sign.
I don't know. You know, I don't like to talk. John and I hit the snooker table the other day.
How was it?
Well, just say that... many would consider it one of the more remarkable feats ever seen on a snooker table.
Really?
Just the variety and quality.
John, how was it? Did you learn anything?
No, I did not learn much. You know, I learned how to, you know, toot my own horn watching him self-congratulate.
Yeah.
Somebody's got to do it.
Did you look at that? Did you see that one? How about that?
And did you see the bartender? Did he tell you that he's been in there practicing?
Oh, I did receive a tip. I did receive a tip.
The guy doesn't know what he's talking about.
I did receive a tip.
I have not been practicing.
And apparently you've received the same tip, Michael. Yeah, so someone's been putting in some hours.
There's no way he can go and beat the heck out of everybody with only playing once every one time he plays.
It's really about approach, Michael. You gotta have the approach. You gotta go in there. You gotta square your body up on the table, not around, you know, sideways or anything like that.
You hear that?
Oh yeah. Prominently featured in the movie Jingle All the Way. This piece,
really?
Run, Run, Rudolph. Yeah. As we all know, my favorite Christmas movie, Jingle All the Way.
He's the best.
Well, we've got news coming your way just around the corner. One more hour of the DGS, and then we'll hand it off to whatever we hand. Oh, the news, total information, PM, all of that coming your way on KMOX.